Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. It's September 25th, 2012. We've got a great show for you tonight on the Heritage Radio Network. Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger, and he'll tell us about his new place in Vermont.
Jimmy.
Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger and other many great places.
Hey, Jimmy.
And Jen brought a special guest in tonight, Bruce Williams from the Williams Brothers in Scotland. So thanks to GreatBrewers.com, our sponsor, and a shout out to Good Beer Seal. Check it out. Find out about places to get good beer in New York City. All right, here we are. Dave, you've been trumped by Bruce Williams.
I have. So I'll hand it over to him.
Jen said that Bruce was available.
Okay.
Well, I'm co-hosting.
We're all hanging. But Bruce is, you know, last time you were on, we talked about things like unique, you know, ingredients in Scottish beer.
Cask conditioning, too.
Heather and Frick and, you know, all that. So, you know, it's one of our favorite guests. Jen, take it away. Let's talk about Bruce. How long have you guys been friends? You guys seem to know each other.
We've been friends since he was on the show when we did a little. We did a brief interview, as you recall, Jimmy, when we found out that Bruce was in town, and Alex Hall gave us a heads up and said you really should have this guy on the show, and we were like, okay. And I had had some of his beer, but I hadn't met him before. And then he came by, and we actually did it. We taped a short interview just to, I guess, play through the holidays when we were short, you know, when we weren't having
Yeah, we had
so many
one
shows.
Of our best interviews was with Bruce. Yeah,
yeah, and it was cut short because we had to get out of here because there was another show coming on. So it's great. Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, great to be back.
Yeah.
So things have changed.
I didn't know. It seems like we've been friends forever. And when we met you on the air, you really made an impact on us. You made us think a little differently about what beer should be.
I think
what it could be.
Yeah,
you know?
I think we've got a fairly unique perspective on things from Scotland, using fairly local ingredients and a heritage of, you know, making indigenous beer styles. So we're using unique ingredients. I mean, Heather Ale, obviously, that's our principal brand of Fruich, as you like to say, Jimmy.
Fruich. Dave, can you say that?
Fruich. That's it. Which is made with heather flowers and bog myrtle. I know that beer's been made for thousands of years in Scotland. And it's really got a real sort of position in the heritage beer market in the UK. And now we've developed that. We've got a beer that's made with pine and spruce that was brought to Scotland by the Vikings in about the 9th century, which I have a bottle of here for you to try. It's called Alba.
Hey, let's pop that. We'll start with that beer. Good. Talk a little bit about the beer, and we'll talk.
Actually,
about
I want to know: is anybody else using Heather right now? Is anybody using?
Yeah, there are, and I get regular inquiries on our website from home brewers, particularly, and small bar owners that have got brew pubs. They're always interested in doing something special, small batches, and there are quite a few of the American brewers now using Heather. They do tend to use dried Heather flowers. We're using. One of the things people seem to forget about what we're doing is that we're actually harvesting all our own raw materials. So we go out seasonally and we'll pick heather flowers. Now it takes us probably about 3 weeks to pick 1,000 bags of just the new flowering tips of the heather. And we have to then store that in frozen facilities to keep it fresh for us to use throughout the year. Now the other beer that we're making, for example, that Alba, that's the one that we pick in the springtime. Do you want to do the honours with that one?
I'll do this. I'm very good at this.
I have to say, this. We started with the Scottish Session. It's a golden ale. It's 3.9%, and I think it's my favourite session beer maybe I've ever had. It's got a lot of flavour. It's got a beautiful
smooth
aroma. Yeah. It's not, you know, it's not overly hoppy. It's just finding a lot of complexity really simply. And it's not using any adjunct type ingredients,
no
extra spices or anything to
You know, there's two markets that we produce for. Principally, we would like to make all the esoteric styles that we do and provide only those things. But then again, you know, we're a considerable player in the beer market in Scotland, and we have to provide what you would call commodity products as well. And session beer is a contemporary modern beer. Now, people in the UK drink 20 ounce pints and they drink them all day long, you know, and a session beer is a very popular product over there. I think it's coming, I've seen it starting to appear here now as well. It's got a presence in the US market too, but mostly when I'm over here, the beers are very strong, you know, they're 5% or over. So it's nice to get a nice light beer, and the challenge as a brewer has always been to try and make that have enough flavor so that it doesn't taste like a Budweiser.
And our local, or you know, our U.S. craft brewers are really embracing that challenge right now too.
Yeah.
It's a big trend, but we're seeing them come along slowly. It's not like everyone is mastering that yet. So
we'll see something like a 4.2%. Like Carton has Boat Beer, which is local. They call it a session beer. That's 4.2%.
Right. I think we consider it under 5.
Under 5 is a session.
Yeah, is that what they are? The official qualification for it, is it?
That's what people say.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of minor. I know that if you're in the UK, we have camera beer drinkers, and these guys come in and they're looking for something around 4%. So if you can actually achieve a nice flavoured beer at 3.9, they're very happy with that. As long as the price point is right. The problem with us selling a session beer in the US is that we're never going to have the price point because it's an import at the same time. But it does, I think it sets a benchmark, and it sets maybe a little bit of a challenge up to the US brewers to say, right, okay, maybe we can do this too with a lot of different things. I mean, and recently I've been doing a lot of these trade shows, and the hit of the trade show seems to be this Krabby's Ginger, which I wouldn't consider to be part of the craft beer market at all. But, you know, people are interested in that. And it's only a matter of time before some good American craft brewers start making good ginger beers as well. And they'll fill that gap very quickly, you know. So it's just basically a little bit of ping pong we're playing with the styles, you know, which I think is interesting.
All right, man. Well, cheers. Welcome back, man. Yeah. So, Dave, you're up in Vermont, Worthy Burger. Yeah. I'm really impressed with you.
Tell us about Worthy Burger.
You keep going. You know, you're moved up there. You're supposed to be farming. You weren't really going to be doing too much.
I was supposed to be semi-retired. Yeah.
And now you've opened a whole new place.
So why didn't you talk me out of doing that?
You never asked me. And you're a genius with all these things. Startups and figuring out investors. And let's take a few minutes and talk about the nitty-gritty of opening a bar up there.
It's in some ways, it's easier in Vermont. It's less expensive, so it's a little less stressful. But, you know, the government is definitely involved in it, and we had to wait a long time for our waste. Up there, the way they control development is with water, wastewater in particular. And so we went through a long process with that, but it all worked out, and now we're open. We've been open for 31 days, and it's been...
I hear it's been crazier than you even expected. You already had busier. High expectations. So.
Definitely busier than we thought it was going to be, which is always a good thing, but we weren't really, we weren't totally ready for that.
I also heard that you were supposed to have a soft opening, and then instead they printed in the paper that you were opening, so there was no such thing.
So we canceled it.
So,
and yeah, we just opened instead. And,
yeah.
And so we weren't ready to do that
either.
So
it wasn't soft at all.
It was hard.
I think it's okay to just open. I'm a fan of when you open, you're open.
And that's exactly what happened. And it was great. It's so different up there, you know. It's a lot smaller population, so you really need to get the locals coming. If the locals aren't buying it, you're in serious trouble. And so far, so good. You know, our price points are good. We're doing these wood-fired grass-fed burgers, and people seem to like them.
How much are you charging for those?
$5.50 for our beef burger. And we also have like a fish burger, a vegetarian burger, and some other things, but in specials. Our chef's great, Jason Merrill. He's having fun.
I click on your Facebook page. You guys are on Facebook, and you get to like you end up salivating over these photographs of these burgers.
He's a fine dining chef who like is just he loves doing coming up with different things between two buns. You know, it's like he just really enjoys it. And we love eating. I've had, I think, 65 burgers in the last 31 days. And so I'm becoming an expert.
How big are your burgers?
A third of a pound.
So you can eat more than... probably eat three of those.
You know, friends of mine, Chad Rich, ate two and then a full thing of fries. And he was full.
Let's talk about the important stuff. How about the beer?
And, you know, it's so funny because... it's a craft beer and burger bar, And but the burgers are
have taken over,
and which is so weird to me. And I really expected the beer to sort of, you know, at least equal it. And it's really the burgers have been sort of overshadowing the beer. But we've got, you know, Hill Farmstead and Lawson's Finest, so I'm psyched to come to work.
And
every
you
day.
Always have at least.
I don't. I mean, I always have three Hill Farmstead, and Sean's been really good to us. And then Sean Lawson, we've had three total kegs, but we're going to start getting more October 15th. We start getting it regularly, which will be nice.
So how many draft lines do you have?
14. 14 beer, and then we make our own soda, so we have a carbonated seltzer line, too.
So what other beers do you have on besides Lawson's Finest and Hill Farmstead?
We've got Zero Gravity from Paul Saylor and Destiny Saxon, yeah, up at Burlington Hearth, American Flatbread.
So lagers, probably, predominantly?
Actually, no. I mean, we've done Saison, Triple.
They're all good.
A Dark Mild. Yeah. They do a lot of ABV beers, a lot of 3 and 4%. Beers that people really seem to like. We've been selling a lot of them. Bobcat, which is from Bristol, Vermont, and a lot of Vermont beers. But then we also have a lot of like California stuff, and you know, a little Green Flash here and there, and
yeah, spruced up.
Yeah,
well, let's go back to Bruce. Now we've like set our little location up there in Vermont. And what town is it in?
It's in South Royalton.
South Royalton, Vermont.
And I will say this: like Scotland is, it's one of the only countries on the planet that I've been to more than once. I've been there three times, and the two places, Vermont and Scotland. I mean, Scotland's my favorite, probably country outside of the U.S.
Never having visited Vermont.
It's there's a lot of similarities. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, then, Bruce, you know, you're trying to find good places that where your casks can be served, because ultimately, as William Brothers, it's a cask specialist, right?
Yeah, up until a couple of years ago, most of our draft beer was cask conditioned. In fact, 70-80% of it was. But we are starting to see a market for the keg beer product now. Now, we've put in new facilities, sterile filtration down to 0.45 micron, all the rest of it, basically in order to guarantee quality and consistency on our product. And now we're much happier about releasing keg products out, and especially when you're putting them into Europe. You know, that when they're a long way away, you know, we've had problems with products going to Greece or, you know, into 30 degree temperatures that our beers can't handle.
And you're quite a stickler for how the casks are handled all along. I mean, I was fascinated. That's what I really walked away with. I knew about your Heritage series and was a fan of all that when I met you. But hearing you talk about cask conditioning, I was like, wow, there are a lot of brewers around the world who could learn, who are trying this out, trying to prepare firkins, and could learn a lot from what you know.
I think, yeah, cask conditioning is a market on its own. It's a whole way of thinking. And do you ever get to that point where you get fed up banging your head against a brick wall? And when I was bringing cask conditioned beer over here initially, there was an awful lot of it going to waste because it wasn't being handled properly. And it was all to do with education. People didn't know about how to handle it. They were just assuming an awful lot of things about this live beer, and it didn't work out. So I lost money on it. I shot myself in the foot a few times in it, but I'm not giving up on cask conditioned beer. I'm just going to be very refined about who gets that product. I don't want it to go out into the marketplace where I know that this salesmanship isn't capable of handling the product. And also that the route to market, i.e. the distribution network, have got to have refrigeration on the way to the point of sale. And that wasn't happening either. That was what was causing problems with our product. I'm not much more confident about that shipping over keg beer, and that's what we're doing actually in the next couple of weeks. We're going to launch Fruich on draft in Times Square at the St. Andrews Bar. So that'll be the first place that will have it on draft, and we're going to test it out there, let it settle in, and see how it works out. We are going to continue with the cask-conditioned beers, but the cask-conditioned beers will only be available from November through to February, and that'll be it. You know, I just can't take a risk outside of that, because you can't guarantee route to market. That's the problem.
All right. Hey, we'll take a short break here. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Thank you.
Show you what I know.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. All right, it's quite a show we have tonight. Bruce Williams is talking about cask beers. Dave Broderick from Worthy Burger in Vermont. Jen Schwartman from Blind Tiger. Before we get into that, I'll just make a quick announcement. You can check out Cask Beers coming soon to Francis Tavern, one of the oldest taverns in New York. Our good friend Alex Hall, who's been a cask crusader for many years. What's the name of his site? It's Gotham Imbiber, right?
Yep.
He had a great newsletter forever, and now it's a site. He's getting back into the scene. He never left, but he's out there trying to make a difference with cask. And he's got a system set up at Francis Tavern, which is a big step. And the brewery that he's involved in, Wandering Star, will be the beer on cask. And they should be up sometime soon, hopefully within the next week. And Alex Hall called me personally. He wanted me to make that announcement. And also, our friends from the Village Voice, the Brooklyn Pour, it's their second year. It's pretty good. It's a large beer fest. It's Saturday, October 6th. And it's in Brooklyn. And if you would like to win two tickets to the early session 1 to 4, you can to enter, you can join the discussion on Twitter by tweeting your shower beer tips at beer_sessions, hashtag shower beer tips. Later on, we'll have a guest, Mr. Mike Edison, who will talk about drinking beer in the shower. So, again, Twitter us at beer_sessions, hashtag shower beer tips, and you can win two tickets to the Brooklyn Pour. All right. So, Bruce, what were you guys talking about? I don't want to miss everything. You know, it's we're on the air and in between, you know.
I'm still thinking about drinking beer in the shower.
Yeah. Drinking beer in the shower. Mike Edison will be on soon.
Stunted me for a second.
I know.
Old friends. We met Bruce Williams a little over a year ago, and Jen and I swear to God, we thought we've known him forever. And it turns out it's a radio buddy. And but what I wanted to say was, how are you going to get you have your cast that you really care about? And I think there was a wave a few years ago. Everybody was doing cask, and I think that people have stepped
and
back
and
realized
every style into a cask.
Yeah, and it's got to be done right. Yeah. And I feel like that you're ready to lead the new revolution. But what would it take? We can talk between Dave and Bruce to get your cask up to a Worthy Burger in Vermont. Now, first of all, do you ship to Vermont?
Well, first of all, do you have casks, Dave?
Actually, we don't have hand pumps, but I am going to do gravity pins.
Right. And I have no problem with doing gravity pins whatsoever, as long as that pin is refrigerated somehow.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because when they bring it out of a cold box and stick it on a bar, you're expecting a cask conditioning process to go at the speed of light, and it doesn't, you know?
No, exactly. So, yeah, we're definitely going to be... We do it now with the Tiger. We don't do it all the time, but we do it.
Yeah, we do. Well, we always have a gravity.
As much as we can, yeah.
We always have at least one gravity. We had two last weekend, and
we got
two handfuls. So we usually have three.
This is what happens when I'm in Vermont.
You haven't been reading the board when you're... Oh, you haven't been in town.
I haven't been in town.
Yeah. See the casks that you've got on in the Blind Tiger? Are they refrigerated?
The ones on the hand pump are refrigerated for the duration. In a separate cooler, keg tap cooler.
Right. Yeah.
And then the gravity, like you're saying, goes from a cold box at night to sitting on the bar all day. And it's
not ideal.
It comes up at 5, you know. And so, yeah, I mean... Yeah, I would like to know.
It
suffers. Yeah, I would think so.
It does. I mean,
Bruce, what would be the ideal then? I mean, I'm not a fan of. I feel like a lot of people have experimented, and people talk about putting the CO2, you know, on top of the
and
beer.
And again, like, I don't have any issues with like putting on inert gas to dispense them with.
You don't have a problem
with
that.
Cask breathers are fine. The thing is that the process of the secondary fermentation is limited by the temperature that it's at. And if you're going to just keep dropping and raising the temperature, you're actually distressing the beer. You're not getting the best flavor out of that beer at all. So I would prefer, if possible, that when you brought these casks out and put them on the bar, that they had a refrigerated jacket on them.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you, if that does work.
It does work.
Okay.
Yeah. And as long as it maintains the temperature of the beer within that, then it's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
This I'm pouring out a bottle of Kelpie here now, which is one of our beers that we make with seaweed. And again, it's kind of like...
Now, one thing to mention about, before we get to the Kelpie, the Alba that we just drank, I don't know if we said it, it has no hops in it.
No,
you're using
hops.
Yeah, so the
Spruce and pine.
Spruce and pine are used in lieu of hops, and they balance malt.
It was really nice.
Super effectively. It's a beautiful beer.
Absolutely
hops. Yeah, and if for some reason someone had a problem with hops, that's one beer that they might be able to find. You can find it in bottles.
And the same with the Heather Ale as well. I mean, I know that if somebody reads the Heather Ale label, it says the word hops on it. But we put like literally one handful of hops into a 50 barrel batch. The reason for that is to stop it being qualified as a malt liquor in the US marketplace. Because there's a legislation here about if it doesn't contain hops, it's therefore.
So the Alba is a malt liquor?
No, if you look at the Alba label, it says hops.
Right? Oh, I see.
But it's like literally that.
Oh, really?
One handful into an entire batch.
So you're not lying.
We're not lying.
Yeah. Wow, so if you don't put hops in, it's a malt liquor, not a beer.
That's right. You've got the.
That is weird.
Your government are protecting you from this sort of thing.
They don't like Gruet.
That is the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's a little.
Let's go back to Cass because like it was five, 6 years ago. People like Alex Hall, there were Cass Fests around town. DBA had Cass Fests. People were putting in systems. They had separate refrigerations and CO2, blah, blah, blah. Thing is, no one from the old world has ever told me how to bring in a cask and treat it properly because I take it, I keep it in the walk-in, and when we serve it, we do the same. We put it on the bar. We do a gravity pour, and we also try to go through it in one night, so we don't feel like there's a lot of variation.
Yeah, but you're bringing it from a 40-degree box in that situation, generally speaking, aren't you? Right. Well, I mean, in most cases.
And you, I think, Bruce, you should start with the fact that when you brew batches of beer, they are specifically for cask, and they're not fully attenuated.
That's right.
Because you're playing a game. Mm-hmm. This is one of the greatest things that I learned. Was that, he doesn't fully attenuate the beer on purpose because you've got this active fermentation going on in that vessel. So it means that then you've got to ride it, you've got to know what temperature it's being kept at through that process and that the process is going to take place at a certain temperature over a certain period of time so that it's attenuated correct to the right point by the time you're actually serving it. And that's like, it's like, try to figure that out.
It's a window, right? And it's a window of defined opportunities, which are the fact that you have to maintain this temperature. You know what your attenuation potential is within that beer, and it's only going to last for that length of time. Now, lower gravity beers, generally speaking, I would say 1 day per ABV, right, is all you can dispense a cask-conditioned beer at, and only if you maintain the temperature at 10 degrees. Centigrade, right? So if you can qualify those two conditions, then the beer will be fine. But after 5 days, it's attenuated out, it's going to be dry, the condition will start coming out of it, and it's just going to go sour almost, it'll just be over attenuated, it'll be very dry, there'll be no residual sugar balance in it at all. And that's it. You've just got that potential. But then some bars will then say, all right, oh, it's still on, it's still okay, and they'll sell it five day six, and they're just killing the brand by doing that. And the, right. And also, and
they're also killing the whole
concept of
cask conditioning, which we've all worked so hard to get people on board with, so that we do sell enough that it is productive to like put in these systems, and then actually, but you have to sell through it fast enough, or somebody gets adventurous enough, they've never had cask condition, they may have heard of it, they're like, I'm going to try that tonight, and they're at a bar, and we serve them one, and then. It's not right. And they probably, if that's their first experience and there's nobody to really educate them on the side, they probably will draw the conclusion, well, I guess maybe I don't like cask conditioned beer. And they may shelve that whole idea for a while until they're adventurous enough again to try it.
Right.
And that ends up being counterproductive.
Unless they're in the situation or the fortunate position where they've got a bar who knows exactly what they're doing. Like DBA, Alex Hall is looking after their beer. He's doing a great job of that, and he's putting it in prime condition, and he's not letting any beer get to day five or day six. If it's not right by then, he just takes it off. He doesn't have to do that because the beers are turning over, and it's a catch-22. You just have to invest in that market.
Yeah. Well, Jen, you're right. I too felt that for a few years ago when people were doing cask, breweries were just pouring whatever their popular style was, double IPAs and imperial stouts. I mean, crazy styles
crazy
of beer.
Crazy Belgian stuff in a cask.
Yeah, that should never have been in
a cask. It happens now. It's still happening. And every once in a while it works. It's some wacky thing, just like a lot of, creative things that come out of American craft brewing and brewing all over the world now. But there are certain styles that are a little more traditionally, like presented in this way. And a lot of times those are the ones that I find really work, even when they're American twists on those styles, they still they present well.
And the hardier a beer is, some of your 10%ers that are being presented as a cask condition product, they'll
hold up
because they've got that alcohol in there, and they've got a lot of potential sugar to go in them because they, you know, they've got 10 days to go, generally speaking, so that they'll hold up a lot better. But I'd actually prefer to drink those on day 5 or 6, not on day 1, 2 and 3, because, you know, they actually mature and become
they
better products.
They definitely get better.
Yeah.
Bruce, what are some American breweries that you like who are making a cask style ale that you would approve of? We talked about
Wandering Star. Yeah, they are doing a great job, but they're doing a British style beer, really, and they are good at that. And I suppose cask conditioning is a British idea, concept, whatever. It just became because of the conditions in Britain are that the average temperature is probably 10 degrees centigrade.
You know? I was going to say it's like a cellar.
Yeah. So yeah, it's typically from there. I don't know. I had some Oliver's beer, which I thought were great, down from Baltimore. Right, they're nice. Again, English style. Steve Jones makes those ones.
I haven't heard of that. Have you guys?
I know, Oliver's. I haven't.
Yeah, really nice. And occasionally I've come across just a strange thing where somebody's obviously sent off a firkin to a brewery and had it filled, and it'll Victory or whatever, it'll come back, and they're good. And other times, not so good. And I don't really want to start listing names here either. That's put me on the spot.
But you're keeping it positive. Yeah.
Oliver's
in
Maryland.
You don't want your shit
right. So Oliver's in Maryland and Wandering Star from Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Definitely worth a shot. Yeah. All right.
I mean, a lot of the stuff that we get is from American breweries because we don't want it to travel too far. And so it is higher in ABV. You know, it's not what cask condition was probably originally intended to be. You know, the stuff that we're pouring here in New York.
We've had some tremendous kegs of some of our favorite American-style IPAs presented in a cask, and it's not traditional at all.
No.
And yet they're really successful, especially when they're really fresh. But that's the nature of IPA. And it's interesting to think, like we're talking about 10% ABV beer in a firkin has a little bit longer, you know, dispensing window. And day 5 is about right. I'm like, wow, it's almost like an accelerated aging process because those are the beers where in bottle you have a greater chance of sitting on it for a period of time and it still has, you know, it comes together, it melds into something.
And I think, one of the great things about it, you know, the bubbles are so much smaller. You can really
fine condition. Yeah,
you can really taste the nuances of the beer when it's a cask, even if it's, it's
for
an American style.
For better or for worse sometimes.
Well, exactly.
You know?
But you really, it doesn't just float across your tongue on CO2.
Right.
It really, you get a lot of stuff that you
so
don't
everything
get.
Has to be there. It's like, has to be the beer, it has to be the system, it has to be the place that's serving it, you know.
Yeah.
All
has
to fall into place.
It's a very difficult thing to just be a total scientist about because you can't. There's an art involved in it as well, and it's just getting that right moment, you know, for the right beer.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes. We've got Mr. Mike Edison coming on. He's going to drink beer in the shower with us. All right. On Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We've got Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger and Worthy Burger. Dave, where should I eat today?
Today?
Yeah.
Well, I think we got to go over to Swine tonight and pay a little visit to John McNulty. Check out his new place.
So where is Swine? So it was your old general manager at Blind Tiger.
Yeah, and a bunch of other places too. He's over at, he's on Hudson Street. I think it's... It's
Hudson and Charles, I think.
Charles, yeah. Right, exactly. And I'm dying to see it. I've heard he's actually got one of the best burgers on the planet. He does like
Let's
some great
see what
mix.
You think after
well,
that.
After eating so many.
Yeah, now you're an expert.
I have the best $5.50 burger. He's probably got the best like $18 burger.
Well, so. I will say there's something great about great places like Blind Tiger. You spawn a lot of people. You've got these great partnerships, you know, I don't know, Spring Lounge and The Gate and now Worthy Burger.
Yeah.
I really respect you, Dave, and it's so great to have you on.
Thanks, man.
All right. And with Bruce Williams and Jen Swerdman, we got an author who's done a lot of things.
What's up,
his
name's
Mr. Mike Edison. He's one of the hosts of Heritage Radio Network show, the Mike and Judy show on Sundays. It's a great pleasure to have you on.
It's awesome being a guest and not a host for a change.
You're an author, a musician, and tell us about your new book, because that's what you're plugging.
That's what I'm plugging. And also, we're going to talk about drinking beer in the shower, which is just a lifestyle philosophy. But my new book is Bye Bye Miss American Pie. It's a very naughty political satire. It's about a presidential campaign gone awry, and what do you know, we're right in the middle of one right now. What are the odds, right? The story is Bye Bye Miss American Pie is about a very sexy female senator who's running for president who gets caught having sex with her very hot and very illegal pool boy, right? And she gets caught in bed with the cabana boy and is supposed to go on TV to apologize, as so many politicians before her have done, but she has another idea. She goes on TV and she says, you know what? I got mine, America. Now get yours. You know you want it. And she quickly becomes the most popular woman in America. At night, everyone gets laid. She rekindles a new sexual revolution in America, and her conservative opponent has to play catch up, and the campaign becomes hyper-sexualized to the point where they're making porn films in lieu of campaign commercials, and hilarity ensues.
And I didn't know about this new book, but it strikes me as great because I believe it was your last book.
Dirty,
which was, you know, a history of porn in the U.S.,
Yeah, well, primarily I'm a journalist and a social critic or historian, so this is kind of new for me. I haven't written any fiction since I used to write penthouse letters back in the day. Yes, Jimmy, they're fiction. Sorry to shatter that myth. You should see the look on this guy's face. He's like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, you know, I like that. So you used to work.
Jimmy knew that.
Tell us, you worked for High Times.
I was the editor and publisher of High Times magazine for a while.
He wrote for Hustler.
Hustler and Penthouse, and I was the editor-in-chief of Screw magazine. In fact, Bye Bye Miss American Pie is sort of an extension of, I think, what our best work was at Screw. And in fact, it's dedicated to Al Goldstein, my old friend and mentor. Who's not in the best shape now. He's out in the... People always ask me, how's Al?
So we can't go too deep with this, because it's just a craft beer show. But that's your intro, but let's just take a step to the side. First of all, what is it about drinking beer in the shower, and why is that so important to you?
It's very important. It's a very important lifestyle component, but let me throw you my bona fides, because before I was running a pot magazine, I was an editor at Beverage World and Beverage World International, the trade magazine. I was a trade journalist covering international beer markets, and especially Latin American beer markets. I was just a journalist, and it was a job I kind of fell into. But what a great job, right? You know, if I had to work a straight job, hey, Mike, you want to go to Dublin and do a story on Guinness? Yeah, you bet. You want to go to Amsterdam and talk to the folks at Amstel and Heineken? Yeah, why not?
Yeah, and we've had the current editor of Beverage World on a few times, Jeff Cialetti, who's a pretty cool guy.
That was a great job, you know? I mean, you know, trade journalism, you could be writing about floor covering and wing nuts, but I got all them bubbles. It was really all right. So, you know, the drinking beer in the shower thing, you know, it was really like one of those you've got chocolate in my peanut butter moments. I was just coming home on a hot summer day, and I really wanted to take a shower, and I really wanted a cold beer. I decided to combine them both, and I had what is genuinely referred to as a eureka moment. And it just became a thing. Hot shower, cold beer. It's
so what in the shower? Do you use a bottle, a glass,
no, no,
a can?
No bottles. Safety first, Jimmy.
You plastic only.
You know, cans. I'm with cans. You know, I know some of you beer snobs sugar out there don't drink beer in cans, but I'm very much a Budweiser in cans guy when it comes to the shower. And it's got to be rockin' cold, like rockin' cold. And you know, there are many beer in the shower opportunities. You know, Jimmy, I conservatively estimate between 2000 and 2010, I drank 500 cases of beer in the shower.
That's okay. A lot.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, but I'm going to throw it
at. At least we know he's clean.
But that's, yeah. But you know, really, that's based only on two beers in the shower a week. It's a very conservative estimate, but over, you know, 2 times 50 times 10, it, you know, adds up pretty quick. But seriously, on dry land, I drank.
All right, you know, beer in the shower. Okay, Bruce Williams, because you're Scottish, you're from a different culture. You guys do things differently. All right, come up. But where else have you ever drinking beers in weird places? Let's go to that. at a beach.
I didn't think of any in particular.
This is like the Newlywed Game. What's the weirdest place you've ever drank a beer?
Yeah,
around a fireplace, picking air. That's probably fine, and that's the most. You know,
that's
most,
not yeah. weird.
I know it's not weird, but it's on top.
And the shower's not weird.
That's sexy and beautiful.
Listen,
you know?
You gotta try it.
And Jen, we're you gotta emotioning in.
I drink beer anywhere I want because you take a to-go coffee cup and put a lid on it, and nobody ever questions what's in your coffee cup.
Do you drink beer in the shower, Jen?
I have never done that.
Well, try. Come.
I know, it's interesting.
5:45.
It's not the first time somebody suggested something, and I went, I can't see why not.
First of all, it is the greatest hangover cure in the world. It's the only thing that works, truly. If you can get into that shower, hot shower, and gag back that beer, you feel fantastic. I mean, for realsies. Sometimes I like the three-shower, three-beer day, which is sort of like an August day. You know, wake up, have a beer in the shower, not because I'm hungover, just because it's a nice day, and I feel like getting the day started right for all you morning beer drinkers. You know, and then do my stuff, and I come back, and it's lunchtime, or it's the end of the day, it's dinner time, and I want to change, you know, before going out to dinner and take a shower.
Did you only drink beer in the shower?
It's the only thing I drink
in
the shower.
It's efficient. It's really efficient, too.
I'm thinking beer shower at BCTC would probably be really, really good.
Not in those showers. I don't want to have a beer. Anywhere near those showers.
Actually, that's the only shower I had that.
You know which beer and shower I love? I love the beer in the shower when I'm getting showered and dressed to go out on a date or something. And I figure, when I get to the bar, why should that be my first drink? So, you know, just trying to.
Well, there's something to say about, you know,
get one in me while I'm soaping up.
Social lubricant and get you warmed up.
Shower lubricant.
Now we'll take. Well, of course, we have to talk about beer. Bruce, what beer did you just pour for us? Because we've got Williams Brothers pouring beers all night for us.
This is a Midnight Sun, which is a winter beer. It's a porter style. So instead of just making it as a normal kind of porter, we've spiced it up with a little bit of ginger to give it a... And it's good, really nice on a cold winter's night to sit and drink a beer that's actually got a little bit of ginger in it. And,
with a cold shower.
In a cold shower. Actually, you know, maybe in a hot bath. Well, you can imagine people drinking, you know, in a hot bath.
I can see this beer.
This is a sauna beer.
I can see this beer in a hot bath. Sauna. This would be fun.
Sauna beer is good.
Sauna
yeah.
beer.
Yeah. Now we're moving
on. I like the sauna beer.
Dave has a sauna.
I have a wood-fired sauna in Vermont, and there's plenty of drinking going on when that's happening.
So one thing you missed, Mr. Mike Edison, that in Scotland they use untraditional ingredients for us, but traditional ingredients for them in their beer. So they use heather, they use ginger. Is ginger traditional?
From the New World, and it came to Scotland, and it's very popular in Scotland. I mean, it just became, we have got quite a sweet tooth, and it's one of the biggest spices that was imported into Scotland. It's not indigenous to Scotland, of course, but pine and spruce is, so is the seaweed, so is the oats that we use in that particular porter as well. It's a roasted oat that we use in it as well. So as much our philosophy is to try and use as much local ingredients as we can. However, you know, we also want to play with a palette of different flavors that excite us too, you know.
Well, I like this. I just Midnight Sun with a little bit of ginger. And is that sold in New York?
Yeah, sold like that. And we also will have it available as cask conditioned over the winter period for the 3-month window that you can have cask Scottish beers here.
Wow. And any places you think will carry your casks this winter?
Cask beers will only be, like, I think the Ginger Man, we're not only going to put some cask in there, we're going to try and get it into DBA definitely, and they've got 2 or 3 locations. But in draft, it'll be available in the St. Andrew's Bar and Highlander Bar.
I think I'd like to get a cask in the shower.
Cask in the shower?
Yeah, I've already tried to retrofit it for a kegerator and that wasn't happening. Maybe I need to go with the cask.
You should do a video, Mike. I bet you could have a cask in the shower and, you know. But, you know, talking about High Times and the others, have you been to San Francisco?
Oh, yes, I have.
Well, Jen was just in San Francisco and she was at the Tornado's anniversary. And
yeah,
she's
going to
tell us about the
celebrated
beer she had, and maybe you have some...
Well, it wasn't
comments.
It wasn't just about the beer. It was about a bunch of incredible people gathering from all over the country. I had no idea how many people were going to travel to celebrate the Tornado's 25th anniversary. I mean, I should have had some idea because they, you know, David Keane was really one of the pioneers, and he's beloved. But there was an incredible draft list. There were multiple parties. There was a trip on a bus up to Russian River where they celebrated him, and David's favorite band from Ohio is American Dog. It's like a rock band. So they played twice. They played at Russian River, and then they played at another bar after the big Tornado party. But at the Toronado, they had a line down the block. I had never seen one of these big events at the Toronado. They do a very famous barley wine festival every year. I think it's sometime in the spring. There's also a strong ale festival, and I just never happened to be in town to see this, although I've heard. And so I actually saw one of these events. And yeah, people fill the place, and they have to open up the second room, and it's just so, it's so fun. And they hand you a sheet at the door, and they say you have to order by number. It's just the, you know, like they give you instructions how you're going to get through this, because it's hard to get a beer, though their staff works their tails off. And the beer was worth waiting for too, because so many different breweries, especially breweries in the West, brewed beer specifically for them. And it's really, like, it was really nice to see such a tribute. And my favorite, of course, was the Russian River. I drank great sours the whole darn time, and I was like, wow.
High five, yep. Jen.
I know, you drink them while you can.
And
it's,
Jen,
hard to stop.
You brought a magazine, so you published an article in a
My friend Megan Flynn has a magazine in the West called Beer West. She's in Portland, and she asked me to write a little personal story for one of, it's just a one-page thing, and it's in the current Beer West. So.
It's in the meat issue, which I love.
It's in the meat, yeah. I was like, that's appropriate. I get it in the mail, because we don't get it in New York, so I had to wait until she sent me a copy, and I opened it up, and I went, well, that works.
It's beer porn.
Yeah, so, but it's actually, it was a nice little story I wrote about my dad and me reaching my epiphany, realizing that I actually am in the family business of teaching after all, and what I teach happens to be beer.
You're brilliant, and you're well-respected in many countries, you know?
In many countries.
You have friends from Scotland, Belgium, you know, and beyond in the U.S.
I get around.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something cool that's coming up, and you guys are all welcome to join us. Mike Edison and I will be co-hosting an election night live show from 8 to 11 p.m.
8 to 11. 8 to when there's a decision.
The Heritage
Which
Radio
means
Network.
8 till maybe April, the way things have been going.
Forget CNN and all that. If you want to tune in for live coverage, listen to Heritage Radio Network.
I'm going to listen to you guys.
On November 6th.
It's going to be some kind of crazy
Mike, what are you going to program? I'm programming. We're going to do a thing from East Coast to West, and every one of the swing states, we're going to talk to brewers and some cool people.
So is this like
people.
A beer porn kind of point of view? Like,
this is the Heritage Clubhouse, Honor Among Thieves, right? And probably a good time to pitch, plug my book one more time before we go off, right? Bye-bye, Miss American Pie. I'd like everybody to find me at MikeEdison.com, where you can find the book easily. There's an electronic version ebook for everybody, and also a very limited hand-bound print edition with hand silkscreen covers. It's really kind of nice and old school.
And what's your Twitter, Mo?
And speaking of San Francisco, it's like real City Lights kind of vibe. That's what we went with this for my subversive political...
You are awesome. I'm a big fan of at Mr. Mike Edison. Check out the Mike and Judy show on Sundays at Heritage Radio Network. What time is your show on?
2 p.m. every Sunday.
But just you can get any time on iTunes or down, you know,
right here on Heritage
click
Radio
on the
org.net.
Yeah.
Awesome, Jimmy. Thanks for having me around.
No, you're great, man. And election night, November 6th, tune in live at heritageradionetwork.org. Who knows who will be on the show, but I think we're going to call the election
live. You know,
live.
The Clinton's were here just the other day, right?
Yeah, at Roberta's. Bill Clinton was right outside.
I told Hillary time and time again, Sunday, 2 p.m., Mike and Judy, but no.
They did Friday, right, or Thursday.
So I've still got all these questions left over I was going to ask the Secretary of State. So, guys, come over to my house. We can talk about Libya and drink beer in the shower.
You're good. Listen, November 6th, election night, turn off CNN, turn on heritageradionetwork.org for Mr. Mike Edison and at beer underscore
Or you get the
sessions.
Picture from the TV and you turn down the volume like people who
listen to
games that way and
yeah,
listen to the radio.
I like that.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, Heritage Radio will be out of sync like the way it sometimes is when you watch sports. With
exactly.
Radio. A few seconds with Heritage Radio, the winner will be announced and we'll be still talking, you know, about the votes coming in California.
Hopefully that'll make a difference, but maybe not hopefully. I don't know. We don't want to get too much into politics, but we got a lot going on, and this election is going
to
be huge,
man.
Switch
to me, I do believe this. Got to vote, and you change minds one at a time. Seriously, I think, you know, trying to change 10,000 minds at once, it doesn't happen. People are listening to the, you know, singing to the choir. Got to change minds one at a time, and you can start with my mom.
All right. Let's toast to that. We'll toast to our good friend.
Mike's mom.
Again, Bruce Williams from Williams Brothers in Scotland.
All right, cheers, guys.
Bruce, just give us a few more words in your wonderful accent.
Well, it's not that. It's about, like, what beer's next, guys. Like, I've provided 5 beers for this show, and, you know, you're pretty poor at offering.
Well, let's go. What's the last one before we sign off?
That was the last one, actually. Oops. Wasn't it?
You just drank it. The Midnight Sun.
Yeah, the Midnight Sun. Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. The next, we have a whole range of them, obviously, and they're not all here. We started doing collaboration work in Scotland now. So instead of collaborating with other breweries, we're collaborating with distilleries. So I was fortunate enough to collaborate with Auchentoshan Distillery, which is the one that we've got currently in cask. It's a wood-aged heather ale. And the next one we're doing is with Bowmore, which is from Islay. And then we're actually taking a load from Glengarry, which used to be used as bourbon casks. So we're trying to cover all the bases with different flavours and all the rest of it. So collaborating with our beer and different distilleries. I think that's something that's a season that we can continue with. But, you know, you're talking about collaborative beers earlier on today.
Yeah, we're going to go out. So we'll give it a little roundup, Good Beer Seal Bars. After the show ends and we have our dinner at Roberta's, we're going to head over to Spite and Dival. Our friend Joe Carroll is doing a special collaborative beer night. He's got some very cool, like McKellar, Evil Twin, you know, Stillwater beers that we all want to try.
Actually, we're talking about doing a collaboration with Stillwater, which is going to be a Scottish Croft Saison. So we're going to be using gooseberries in it, which is one of our beers made with gooseberries, groset, elderflowers, bog myrtle, and then going to use Brian's yeast as a Saison yeast in it to really dry it out.
Would you make the beer here in the States?
We're going to make it. This first batch, Scotland. We're doing it in Scotland.
Yeah.
Right. When's that going to be?
We're going to be brewing it in December.
Mm.
And it won't be available probably over here till, I don't know, February, March, depending on how quickly the authorities.
Jimmy, man, we should go over for that.
I'd love to go, man.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Oh. And what's going on? Blind Tiger, anything coming?
We got Bill Kovaleski in the house tomorrow from Victory and doing a big Victory event.
And your very special night, your Monday nights is pretty cool now, too, isn't it?
Yeah, we've been doing VSK Mondays, very special keg Mondays. And this past one was Sean Hill, the Holger Dansk, which is his fall smoked beer that he does with Anders Kissmeyer.
I can't believe I missed it.
It's still
on. Oh, really? That's where I'm going.
There's just a little bit left.
You guys go wherever. No, I like Spite and Dival, but I think I should head over and drink that beer. It's one of my favorites he does.
Once a year.
What is it?
All right.
Yeah, it's a smoked brown ale.
Sweet. And also, we've got the Village Voice Brooklyn Pour event Saturday, October 6th. And our friends in Staten Island are getting ready for the Richmond County Craft Beer Festival at Kilmeyer's Old Bavarian Ale on October 7th. Check out goodbrewseal.com for more information. And again, I'd like to thank our sponsors, greatbrewers.com. You guys are awesome. Thank you again. Check out Beer Cloud. Take the Great Brewers Test 100 or 20. And Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. You can find us on Facebook, Beer Sessions Radio, on the Heritage Radio Network. And you can follow us on Twitter at @beer_sessions. Thanks to Dave, Jen, Mike, and Bruce Williams for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. Why do I say that so much? Bruce Williams, it sounds like the friend that you should have met.
At least you're not trying to say Frauk.
Bruce Williams, and there you go. And I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Bree O'Connor, engineer Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.